We are on topic 3 continued, 3.6.
10.4.
10. Oh, okay. So I did that. 10.4. Oh, rules of good conduct. Okay. Okay. So remember, Snataka then means the graduated Brahmana. So graduated Brahmana who has now gotten married. So these are then duties that he would be performing. So then, we see his point is that he always has to be engaged in sacrifice. He can't neglect his study. And he shouldn't do things that others do just for material benefit. It means he takes care of himself, but he's not doing it because he's trying to become like the others, become wealthy and influential in position and this and that. That's not his duty. Brahman means one who knows Brahman. Right? Others, they may be interested in these things. That's their business. But a Brahman, he's interested in Brahman. Therefore, how much he has to deal with the material energy, that much he deals, and the rest of it he doesn't. And he'll pick an occupation that's not going to create any problem for doing that. You know, like that. He has to be practical, of course, but he should still pick something that is going to, you know, get the work done that he can perform his devotional activities and his study. You know, study, teaching, like that. Okay, so then he receives guests, he must take care of guests properly. Like that is grihastha, that's a very major point. Then begging, he may do that. That may be one of the ways that he maintains himself. Then rules of good conduct. So that's very important, is these rules then establish all the things. Your economics work if there's good interaction. Social things work if there's good interaction. So the whole thing goes down to good conduct. Right? So whatever you're doing, you'll be successful if you have good conduct. Because people then will be able to trust you, they have a relationship with you, and they know it'll work, they know what the results they'll get, they'll know that there'll be stability. So then they'll always, someone with good conduct will always be preferred over someone without. So that is the main element. If that's there, economics will happen. Not by anything else. You can be educated, you can be this, that, but just because you have the degree, just because that, if people can't work with you, then unless you're the best in the field, then people will tolerate. But as soon as someone else comes along who can do what you do and has better character, then they'll have the job. Like that. So that's always must be seen as that's very important. So then personal appearance, that should be proper as behavior then. Respect towards deities, brahmas, and auspicious things. So he always is very careful that anything that is used in sacrifice or is connected to sacrifice or is connected to the scriptures and the deities, and he's always respectful of, like fire, he'll always be respectful of fire because fire is Agni. Agni carries the sacrifice. Water, that's Varuna, he'll always be conscious of that. So he won't, you know, spit into water, throw dirty things in water. He won't, you know, warm his feet by the fire. He won't, you know, throw dirty things into the fire. You know, like it's a common thing. People build a fire, cook, this, that, do things, and then when they're cleaning up camp, they just throw all the garbage in the fire. Very common. So they wouldn't do that, you know. So one thing is you make a pile of garbage and you burn it. But that's, you've added fire to that. You haven't added garbage to fire. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
That's the...
Does that garbage thing apply to... Because a lot of times they bury it and, you know, it's Mother Earth is...
It means you have to see what's appropriate, what goes where and how, and, you know, it shouldn't be inconvenient. The whole thing is the whole picture has to be taken into consideration. Garbage has to be thrown somewhere. Mm-hmm. So that an area is designated that's not going to be inconvenient for anybody, and then that's used like that. But it shouldn't be just thrown anywhere, because that'll be inconvenient for others. You know, it'll cause disease, it's unsightly, you know, it'll cause, this obstruction, you know, all these kinds of things. So those are always considered, that this shouldn't happen. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
So you have to consider yourself, whose dependents, relatives, the society that you're dealing in, the individuals of those society, you know, the nature and the respectful elements of nature, and then ultimately the Lord and his associates. So, like, all that has to be taken into consideration. That is then a trained person. Is that based on all that, then they'll make the decision.
That awareness.
Hmm?
That awareness.
Yeah, that awareness. And so then the point is because they see the Lord, then they can see everybody else. So then they, what will please the Lord, then they look at it, how they're going to deal with the society, with the family, with their money, with their dependents, with their everything, with the elements, with the demigods, with all these different things. That'll naturally come. So the most important is awareness at the top, but the point is you only can be aware of anything if you're aware. Right? Baba says, first become conscious, then become Krishna conscious. Because if you're not conscious, how do you be Krishna conscious? That's the whole point, is if you're not conscious, then you can't be Krishna conscious. And the two go together. You know? That's the point. Is they're connected. So that's the if one is conscious, then all these other things will naturally follow. So that's the whole purpose of the Vedic society, is to create that consciousness. So in the student means the girls can become conscious in a environment of attachment, because that's their field. So when they're with those things, elements of their field, they're comfortable. And then in that, then they can turn their focus outside themselves. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
When the girls are in an environment of you know, facility and these kind of things, where they are happy with everything going on, they can turn their attention then on others, because they're not worried about getting their own situation properly settled, because they're very sensitive. So if there's anything wrong in their field, then it affects them very much. So when that's settled, they're peaceful. So when they're protected, they're peaceful. And so then they turn their attention outside, they become conscious of the environment. They're already conscious, but forgetting for themselves, and then their good qualities come. So the more they're protected, the more their good qualities manifest. But the boys, in that environment of attachment, they don't become conscious, because it's already being taken care of. You know? Because it's not that they're, I say, wanting it for self, it's just that it's there. Because their thing is just being, being served. Not that it's mine. You know what I'm saying? Yes, I, you know, I am being served. The wife is mine.
Right.
You know? So I have myself, I am an individual, and as an individual, I have all these things. It's all part of the extension of ego, of I. Well, the woman, it's mine, and that makes my ego. I am, you know, well situated. I have a husband who's therefore my social position. I have a big house, therefore I'm in this. I drive this. I wear that. I talk like this. So what she has is her identity. But the man is, he has the identity, and then that may be expressed through the things. You understand? So the two elements are common, that there's ego and there's the externals. But it's just, which is the approach? So you see there's always a compatibility will be there between the man and the women, because they're dealing in the same fields, but their approach to the fields is different. So if that's understood, then you get it to work. If it's not understood, each one thinks the other one would function the way they do, then it doesn't function at all. Because you see there's a commonality, but then when you get into it, you see that they're completely different. You know, So
could you say that the woman gains the identity from the things,
yeah,
and the man projects his
identity through the things?
Through the things.
Yeah, that's the difference. But both of them, if you're dealing with ego and things, you know, that's the point.
Right.
You know, so, but it's just the difference of the approach, because the material consciousness is I and mine. But the male aspect is more I, and the female aspect is more mine. Both have I and both have mine, but it's just where the emphasis is.
Right.
So it's more on a mine for the women, so that's what's prominent. They're always like, yeah, my this and that, and that, you know, like that. Well, the men are, yeah, so I did, you know, like that. You understand? It's just the way it is. It's not a matter of a fault, it's a matter of this is the way they're made. Yeah. You know, it's just like, it's not a fault that the knife is sharp on one side and dull on the other. It's the way they're made. So knowing that, then you can use it to advantage. You can cut with the one side and not get cut by the other. Yeah, you can put your finger on top and get an exact cut. But if it was kind of sharp on both sides, you can't do that. Or if it was not sharp on either side, then...
pretty useless.
Yeah, like that. Yeah.
Unless it's butter.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, you could... I think you could get by with that, dude. Yes. Yes. Come forth. I will, how do you say, slap you to death with my butter knife.
If the consciousness of either male or female is getting purified, so such consciousness also different according to gender?
No, consciousness is the same. It's just that it's going to come through that medium. So the point is even the Krishna conscious woman who's, you know, like that, still the environment of the woman's environment goes with the conditioned nature.
Right.
So they can be very advanced, but still they'll be more comfortable in the feminine environment. Because that's where the conditioned nature goes. Just like the fish can be Krishna conscious, but he's more comfortable in the water than on the land. You know? Like that. So that's just the condition, that's the body and the mind and the intelligence and ego that they have. So that remains only at the point of liberation. If one wants, one can give it up. But that means he doesn't interact with what's here. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Sometimes it's said, we're liberated. You know, when someone's liberated, then we don't have to follow the rules. But that means because they're not here. The body's here, but they're not here. They're in the spiritual world. So in meditation, they're in the spiritual world. So they're in their spiritual form, and they're performing all their duties and everything on that side. So they're always performing. There's no time when you're not doing following. That would be impersonalism. One's always following. But it's just a matter of whether one's doing it here in this sphere or in that sphere. So you see, if they interact here, then they come down to the Madhyama platform. They don't remain as Uttamas. There's no interaction with Uttamas. Uttamas aren't here. But an Uttama comes down to the Madhya. So when we say the Uttamadhikari and you're interacting, means an Uttamadhikari who's acting as a Madhya. That's what's there. Otherwise, they have nothing here. So then they will follow the position of their, you know, at least either their previous, you know, conditioned nature, or, you know, the so-called projected conditioned nature. You know, like Prabhupada, he would speak and act like a man, you know, though he's not from this plane. Does that make some sense? So he would follow the etiquette and different things and how they would talk and everything and the way he would think, you know, at least project. That would be through that masculine nature, because that's the etiquette, that's the rules.
He may be a Manjari in the...
Yeah, that doesn't matter, because those are rasa.
Yeah.
You're not forced by those. Here, that's the way it works. It'll only work that way. You know, it's just like your arm can only bend a certain direction. It won't bend the other way. It doesn't matter if you're a pure devotee or not. It bends, it's just the way the body is.
Yeah.
But because they are on that consciousness, that body is pure. It is basically as good as transcendental. Because it's in the fire, it's in touch with transcendence, meaning the soul. So therefore, their body is also considered spiritual. Yeah, like that. So it's a, you know, unique element that's there. That's why then these things is then, they have to have that, be conscious, so that to get there, one of the methods is to become conscious of everything in your surrounding. So, as we're saying, the boys pull out of the realm of attachment, and then from that environment of detachment, then they start to discriminate. Right? Because that sense of I then has to be found. Right? Otherwise, there's no sense. They live in the house, the mother takes care of everything, you know, they just go out and play with their friends, they have no responsibility, you know, nothing to do. And so that sense of I is not attained. So you see, that's why you see is the youth, they spend so much time doing crazy stuff to find an identity.
Right.
a strange music, dress, you know, habits, language, is simply to create that sense of I. You know? So that's the point. So then if the boys are taken out, then they discriminate, because intelligence means to discriminate. Mind means it's how you say, is it ego, but it's the mind. The mind has accepted it. Or it's not mine, it's rejected it. But for the men, they have to go into the identity through intelligence. Right? That's the thing. The women will go into it through the mind. They like an experience, like they like a particular aspect of existence, so then they go through.
They have because, to feel it.
Yeah, because existence, these things, that's septic on one side. At the same time, it's also tamasic on the material side. You know, because sat is that, while intelligence is passion. So for men, it's the activity that's important. For the woman, it's what you get from the activity is important. The experience you get and the result you get is what's important. For the man, the job being well done is most important, and that you get a good result out of it is practical. You know, that should naturally come. But if you do something that's a useless, stupid thing, you know, and get a good result, men can't do it for a long time. You know? Like that. So it's got to feel that it's going somewhere, accomplishing something, getting something done.
Like that. If one is going according to his karma to opposite, you know, to get new body in opposite sex, so how it transfers, you know? Consciousness.
Man is man, because it's just what it goes through. It's just like you take a light and you shine it through yellow glass, it's yellow. You shine it through green glass, it's green. Does that make sense? So it's just the same. Main thing is the consciousness is what you're attached to. Men tend to become attached to women, dependent upon them, because they feel that emotional support, they're there for them, so they can depend upon them. So then the men will tend to think of the women as a support. Like I think it was I don't know when it was, about a couple of years ago, when there was a few planes going down. You know, they always hunt for the black box and,
yeah,
you know, get whatever's, you know, like that. And then something came out, one little, like a little blurb somewhere, and it mentioned that one of the common things on all the black boxes was you have these, you know, how you say, the captains, the airline, you know, who flies the airplane. You know, and they're really, you know, top together, professional guys. But the last things they always do is call for the mommy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's just like it's all falling apart and it's going to crash, and they call out to the mommy.
Wow.
You know. So that was something that was interesting, because, you know, either all of them or a significant amount of them were doing that. So they think of their mommy. So then, you know, or they'll think of it like that. These guys think of their mommy, I guess, because they're more regular. Something, I don't know, why they think someone else will think of their wife or their daughter or their girlfriend or something. So then wherever it is that one feels that one's, you know, mind can be reposed. Because when there's a difficult situation, naturally you look for what's the most comfortable situation. So for the man, the general tendency is women. Right? And for women, it will be men. So then the women will take birth as men, and the men will take birth as women. So it just keeps flipping.
Maybe that's why women population is increasing. As more men become, you know, they're becoming more and more attached to it.
Yeah. It's always more. I think Prabhupada mentioned the women's population is always more. It's always more.
An interesting point as well, Maharaj, from just a minute ago, was that a lot of the time you hear people say that we're devotees, we don't have to follow that rule.
Mm-hmm.
But you were mentioning that as we become Krishna conscious, then we deal with Krishna's creation properly how it should be dealt with, and not how we, you know, whatever we might think.
Yeah, it means you have to. It means otherwise you say we don't have to follow the rules. Okay, then what do you do? You know what I'm saying? You're going to act.
Yeah.
So what's going to be the basis of your action? We don't have to follow the rules. Then what rules will you follow? Because you will follow rules. The conditioned living entity cannot function without religion. Absolutely cannot. There's no question. No ifs, no ands, no buts. Now, it's whether it's God-given religion or man-made. That's all. You know, a bunch of bikies. They have their strict rules. How they deal, how this and that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, how their women behave, how they do, you know, how much beer they drink, you know. How many times, you know, in a lifetime they wash their jeans. You know, all these things. You can't do something different. You know, than that. You can't chrome your tires, right? You can chrome the rim, but you can't chrome the tires. No. That they're stupid. You know.
For sissies.
Yeah. For sissies. Yeah. Right. You know, you can't not have a peanut tank. You know. You know, you have to have a peanut tank. You know, it has to be chopped. It has to be. Otherwise, you know, you couldn't, you know, roll up on, you know, just some
factory.
Yeah, factory, you know, Yamaha or something like that. They go, you know, who's this guy? You know what I'm saying? It's got to be some big, hunky, chunky thing, you know, like that. So then, you know, that's there. Yeah, and they have their thing. You just like you go to, you know, people who are into skiing, they have their religion, what they wear, what their talk is, how they hang out, how they associate, how they interact with each other, how they make friendships, contacts, relationships, you know, like that. What you can, how you dine, how you eat, everything. It's, everybody has something like that. And then because they have that, that's then where they identify, and then they can interact with others. You can't have social interaction without religion. The difficulty is whether it's man-made or God-made. So that's all it's saying. It's just saying we don't have to follow the rules means we don't have to follow God's religion. We're going to follow our own concept. That's all. It means on that level they're not aware of that aspect of their life hasn't been engaged in devotional service. Other aspects may be. So where they are accepting, that aspect's there. That's the meaning of pure devotee, means it's been cleared.
Everything's body and mind.
Yeah. So mixed devotee means that you're partly devotee and partly not. So that sadhana bhakti means that. Is that there'll always be some mix. So in the neophyte stage, then the mix is gross. That's why they're called prakriti bhaktas. Because they're so absorbed in material energy that becomes so prominent for them. That there'll be many areas that they deal in that aren't engaged. But as they continue to engage in devotional service, then they get the knowledge and detachment. That's automatic from devotional service. Then they start to become more and more aware. Then they're able to pull back more and more from the material energy and be more and more absorbed. Though externally it may not change at all. You know? The lifestyle may look the same, but the consciousness changes. Like that. So, like that. Until they get to the Uttama platform, then, at least on the material platform, you don't have any mix. You may have fragrance, but no mix. So that's what they call pure. Like that. Also, technically, the Madhyamas are also pure devotees. Because to be a Madhyama means you have to give it up the endeavor for material development. You know, at least on a major scale. You know, it may be still the Madhyama on the Nishta platform may not be as developed as the Madhyama on the Asakti platform. Like that. So he may still have kind of a form through which he likes to deal. But as he gets Ruchi, then that may change very much into more towards the primary devotional activities. And then at a sakti, then that's, you know, very much because the attachment is there for
it. When you're saying that, like, Uttamadhika is to come into the world of Prithai, come down to the Madhyam platform, then it's just that their interactions are on the Madhyam level?
Yeah, their interaction with the consciousness is Uttam. That's why we call them Uttamas. But how they interact is through the Madhyama platform, because the Uttama doesn't distinguish in the material energy.
So just Krishna.
Yeah, so therefore there's no need to preach. Everybody's already devotees. All jivas, they see as devotees. Maybe they don't realize that they're all devotees. And they see the faults in themselves. So I'm not a devotee, they're all devotees. So why would you preach to them? You know? So it's you know, it's like Sukadeva Goswami. You're looking at material energy. You know, there's you know, mud road Brahman that he's running down, and there's tree Brahman, and he, you know, and there's naked girl Brahman, and you know, there's, you know, he just goes by. It's all, does it all Brahman to him as he can. So that element is there. So when we say what is the consciousness, that we're going by, I mean what their adhikar is, that's what we're going by, the consciousness. Because Prabhupada established the preaching movement is that a neophyte is functioning on the Madhyam platform also. Right? Because he does the service and activities and takes the angle of vision of the Madhyama. But he may only have the neophyte consciousness. Therefore, you'll see anomalies. They're doing the highest work and doing the things and preaching the highest philosophy, but their interaction with others and all that may or may not be good. You know, because they haven't actually become conscious enough to accommodate, you know, the Lord and the Lord's creation. You know, Lord maybe, but the creation, he hasn't quite got it together.
It seems there are two different definitions of Uttam, Madhyam, and Kanishka. Because the one in the from Metta Devotion where it says that the Uttam is the one who knows the scriptures perfect and can't be defeated.
There's three. There's scriptural knowledge, faith, and chanting. So three ways that it's defined. They all go together. It's just depending on what is your point to establish.
Oh.
Just
clarify. So can you explain that? The faith...
So by scriptural, I mean the Uttamadhikari understands what the scriptures are saying. And he knows them so that no one can defeat him. Right? Because anybody who would argue against the Vedic paradigm would not be an Uttamadhikari. You understand? You can't get to that level. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Impersonalists and other, they can't get, they're not Uttamadhikaris. So they would not have the consciousness and understanding that they would. So they know what the Shastra is for. And they can argue it right on down because they're not conditioned. There's no obstacle to them presenting the absolute truth. They're not tongue-tied. They're not, their intelligence didn't work, or the mind distracted them, or the senses. No. So therefore, they know Krishna, and they can present it, and then they do. So no one can defeat them. The Madhyama has that conviction, but may not have that realization or that scriptural knowledge. So he may be able to be defeated, but he cannot be wavered from his determination. Mm. And then while the neophyte may not be able to argue and may be wavered, you can't have a third class pure devotee, which means they don't know how to argue the points, but they can't be wavered like that. Mm. So on faith, then also it's the same, that principle is that they have that complete faith in Krishna, or you know, whatever it is, and then on the chanting, then it's the neophyte, I think it was, chants offensively, the ones in clearing the Uttamam is by seeing them, you chant.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. So it's just, these are different symptoms, just depending on how you present it, but they're all, it's different ways to look at the same thing, you know, depending just what you want to take, you know, if you want to take design of the Madanga, then that's one discussion. When you take acoustics of Madanga, that's another. You know, you want to play, you know, playing techniques, that's another discussion.
Yeah.
But it's the same subject.
Yeah.
Like that. Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Sense control with regards to his wife, then there's details there that, you know, basically are saying that the Brahmin wouldn't act in any way that would agitate his senses. You know, that's the whole thing. He's not living with a woman to have his senses agitated. He's living with a woman to perform religious duties. Like that. He wants to have a child, then the senses may get agitated. But otherwise, he just knows what things are going to agitate the senses. So, you know, women with no clothes on can be agitating. Therefore, it's the lifestyle is arranged that he doesn't see his wife undressed. You know, he doesn't sleep with her in bed. You know, he sleeps in his bed, she sleeps in her bed. You know, little things like that. They're just very careful of, so that it all makes it work nicely for them. Then, respectful dealings during hygiene. You know, that he's just careful of, you know, where he throws his garbage, how he cleans, these different things like that. You know, so he behaves properly. You know, so that kind of a element is there.
Generator's plan.
The generator. Uh huh. Yeah, right. Or something. respects towards fire. We mentioned before, he won't warm his feet by the fire. You know, he won't throw dirty things into the fire. That kind of, because, you know, it's Agni, because Agni is the carrier for the oblations and the sacrifice. So he's always very careful how he deals with fire. You know, you cook the offerings on fire so you can offer to the deity. So fire becomes very important. Okay, the hair respectful attire. Sure. So not dwelling in a place where the sacred law is not obeyed. In other words, he should situate in a place where he can get the best association. If he situates himself in a place where he can get no good association, you know, and everybody around doesn't follow any of the principles of Krishna consciousness or Vedic law, then that's not considered an ideal place like that. So one is always careful of that. You know, one all tries to situate yourself in such a place that one can get that inspiration one requires. Okay, care of eating. What a lucky detail. Care of eating. So, care of eating. Not sure what care of eating is.
Well, right times.
I'm not sure. Just. But in any case, these are all the things here. You can see is just these are elements of what he has to do. You know, his respect towards those sort of things that are respectable. You know, the Lord, the devotees, the Brahmins, the demigods, the elements, the whatever it is. Then you have sense control of the wife, dealings during hygiene, dealing with fire, his dress, where he lives, care and eating, care during travel, right? You know, it means you don't travel in something that's unsafe. You know, you just don't take any risks. That's the whole principle. Just travel. Let him not do anything useless. You know, sitting around picking up dirt claws and crushing them. You know, ripping grass out while you sit there. You know, those kind of things shouldn't be done. Because one, it's a waste of time, and two, you're disturbing other living entities. The grass kind of, it's grown like that for a particular purpose, you know. Unless you're out there, you're going to, one by one, rip out every blade of grass and make it short, you know, that's one way. But if you're just doing it, then you're disturbing the grass. Or, you know, you crush dirt claws and maybe bugs with them. So then you kill so many living entities like that. So like this, something useless is never done. Avoiding bad association, you know, he's always careful to stay out of bad association. Gifts to be avoided, you know, in other words, gifts that are coming from sinful people and cannot be used for themselves, but can be used for dependents or given away to others, but they can't use it for themselves personally. Because people, depending on how they make their money, then that money is considered pure or not pure. So impure money will carry with it impurity. And you'll become contaminated. So if money is impure, then it can be accepted, but not used for oneself. In other words, one would get no benefit oneself from it. You can buy things and create things for dependents, but you wouldn't be. You can't say, oh yeah, I'm buying food for my dependents, but then I'm also eating it. No, because that's yours. It has to be things that you close for them. Things, medicine, this, that, things for them that only go to them. It doesn't go to you at all. Then bad money can be used that way, or because they won't get the reaction. Because the reaction goes to the next person. That means the first person that took it, not to the one he gives it to. Or they get the money and they just give it in charity to, you know, a qualified Brahmin or to the deities like that. Then it's purified. So it's purified by coming to the first person. Does that make sense?
It can also be purified in the sense that you're giving money, it's, you know, it's from an impure place. You take that money, use that to buy food, which then you offer to Krishna, and then you eat the remnants. Is that
still you get the consciousness?
You get the consciousness.
Yeah, because they've given it to you. So nothing comes for free. You pay, then it purifies it, reduces it. But you get it for free. Nothing comes for free. That's the thing. There's this idea I will get for free, but it doesn't. No, there's no question of anywhere, anything, anywhere getting for free. There's always some pay. There's always some pay. So that's the
point.
So we see is that in all these different things, everything in life is being covered. One is going to have to decide on how he's going to deal with others, right? If he's going to be considered proper, he's going to have to make a determination how he's going to deal with his wife, right? He's going to have some kind of hygiene. You know, he has to make a, because if he doesn't, people will think he's an animal. You know, it's like, how many times did he brush his teeth in a day? How many times does he take a shower? You know, what is, you know, all these different things. How does he live his life in that way, as far as cleanliness? The fire, his attire, where he's situated, where he lives. Right? Like you take a rich person, they'll live in a nicer neighborhood. Why? Because people in that neighborhood follow the rules. They won't live in a neighborhood that's full of thieves and other people who don't follow the rules. Does that make sense? So anyway, all these things one's going to do anyway. One's going to have one's care and travel. But now, who sets the standards? One is going to eat. Who sets the standards? Right? One is going to do activities. Who sets the standards? Association. Who sets the standards? Does that make some sense?
Yeah.
So that's the point, is all the Dharma Shastra does is go through the practical day-to-day life of an aspiring sadhaka, and then what he can do to bring his life fully in line with God consciousness. Does that make some sense? So that's the principle that's going on. So it's not that it's something else imposed. It's kind of like, hey, well, I don't need all this. But it's like you're doing it anyway.
Hmm.
You know? Like we see here, it comes out as always a difficulty. We have our, you know, we have a dress, right, for the school, you know, but then there's always a thing, oh, are they warm enough, or this, or that, or why this, or that, or this is fanatic, or why didn't you do that? Everybody's got their opinion, you know, like that, or the food, whatever food you feed them, then they got an opinion about that, this is healthy, that's healthy, so many things are healthy, this one's not, you know, so it doesn't make any, but who set the standard, you know, that's the thing. By what standard do you make it?
Yeah, make better or worse.
Yeah, so that's it. Who has decided who created the body? Who knows how the body functions? God or us? So that's the thing. So therefore, the body is going to function how God says. You know, God says use ghee. But according to some, you know, modern nutritionist standards, they may say ghee is not good. Safflower oil is good, because it's the highest in polyunsaturates and all these kind of things. But according to the Vedas, that's not good for you, because it creates impurity in the body.
Safflower.
Safflower.
What's that?
It's one kind of oil.
Safflower.
Safflower. I don't know if it's still popular, but it was in the 60s, 70s, 80s, at least 90s. It's considered the best of all oils as far as health goes, not necessarily taste. Probably taste people go more for olive oil or something, but like that. But then the Vedas will say that oil creates lust.
All kinds of oil.
Yeah, oil just creates lust. Ghee doesn't.
Oh.
Ghee is good for the brain, it's good for the skin, it's good for the semen, it's good for digestion, it creates fire, it does all these different things. So oil doesn't.
So olive oil.
So they attribute, basically, all it is there's oily substances. Ghee gets thrown in there with it. Ghee's in its own category.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't distinguish. Just like you have gur, you have sugar, you have rock candy. Gur is good for you because it's got all the vitamins and minerals and everything in it. But at the same time, as it restricts it because of its strong flavor. You can't take too much of it, right? You can't put too much gur because it becomes so overpowering because of all the things in it. So you can only put so much. It restricts itself. And so it's medicinal, but you still have to be careful. Sugar, you've cleaned out all those you know, minerals and everything that's good for you. But you can increase the sweetness, so you can put a huge amount. And so that creates heat in the body. Gore will create heat also. It's very hot. But it's because of its restrictive nature, you can only put so much. Sugar, you don't have that restriction. You can put so much because it doesn't have that side flavor. It just creates sweetness. And it creates heat in the body. So therefore you can get all kinds of troubles if you eat too much of it. But rock candy then is purified of any impurities at all. So it's completely pure of sweetener. So it actually now cools the body. It's medicine again. So gur is medicine, rock candy is medicine. Sugar in between is not. It has some effect, the liver likes it, but the liver likes the pure state the best, the rock candy.
It also likes gur?
It also, but it's not. You don't get as much from the gur, and there's all the heavy elements in it. But it's also good, because it has all these different elements that are very good for the health, so it all goes together and balances. So it's either in its raw state or completely purified state. In between is the problem.
The karmis have this idea that the olive oil is very good and good for the heart, but that's not a fact. I mean, it creates lust.
It means good for the heart. I mean, heart is, you know, the emotions, the this, the that, it's so many things, you know, because they're all connected. So the point is, it may be good for the heart, but it's not that it doesn't create lust.
Right.
I mean, Italians aren't known to be the
right.
most sense-controlled people on the planet. You know? When you think of Italians, you think of very, you know, passionate and, you know, the zest for, you know, interaction and life and, you know, like that. So, I mean, you see all those ones, they all take that. I mean, it's all throughout there. I think you start from Spain. It's got olive oil, right? Spain,
Portugal,
Italy,
yeah. Greece.
Portugal, Greece. They're really, you know, then the Middle East, the Lebanese and the Israelis and all them like that. They all are into olive oil.
Yeah.
That's their oil. And they're all known as passionate people. You know, very passionate, very interactive. So they're interactive, so maybe good for the heart because they're all very personal people. But it creates passion, like that. So it can be used, but just my point, what I'm making, is that the modern science and the modern popularity may say one thing, but it doesn't necessarily mean. So what happens is what God says is ignored.
Yeah.
And what that. So that's my point, is that there's standards that are made, and that if we follow them, then there'll be benefit, we'll get benefit from them.
The other point to that is also that their standards are continually changing.
Yeah, that's the whole point. What today was, it's just like I remember as a kid, is that the theory was as a grown adult needed 40 grams of protein. And they were pushing that for years, I think since the 50s, when nutrition kind of became prominent. Because up to the World War II, there was no problem. No one worried about nutrition because whatever they ate was good for them, and they ate according to tradition. And that tradition was based on what worked in that climate, in that environment. Then after World War II, then basically the whole systems of agriculture and that changed. They got into these chemicals, because you know, they had so many chemical factories to make munitions, so they just converted them into fertilizer factories and medical facility factories. You know, because you could produce a chemical, it doesn't matter what chemical, you know, like that. So then from that, then it was seen that the benefits you would get out of the food went down. They weren't following traditional methods of cooking anymore. They, you know, newer ways of cooking came up. Before, you cook on a wood stove.
Fridge.
Yeah, the fridge came up. All these different things. You know, you have these pre-cooked things, you know, the microwave, all these different things that just take out everything valuable.
And they started eating a lot of meat.
Yeah, so all these things just changed. And then it was seen that what you would get out of a field, in the 50s they were talking about that it was down 11% of the nutritional value that what you get from the same field, I forget, like 10 years before. Because of the new things of the chemicals and all those different things. And they were seeing it was going down, 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 down. So then it becomes very important that you know what is nutritional. And so that you can target things where you can get the maximum amount because it's minimally available.
Right.
Does that make sense? So that's the need for it. It's not that it's a natural thing. The natural thing is you eat your food of that place that people have been eating for generations, and you're sure you're going to survive. They survived, why you shouldn't survive? You know, according to the climate, according to what grows, according to the nature of the people, they have their food. You know? So some more eat wheat, some rice, some corn, some this, some, you know, your different vegetables, how they put together the meal, like that. So it depends upon what they eat. Then these things are important. Like salad, according to books, is full of vitamins and minerals, but because of the celluloid, our stomachs can't digest it. As it goes in, it's how it comes out. We don't get hardly any nutritional value from salad. It's just filled. What it is roughage. But why people won't like to eat it is because what they eat creates constipation. Your non-fibrous diet, your meat diets and bread, very constipating. So therefore, without salad, their bowels won't move. So that's why it's such an integral part. It's because of that diet. While you go into like the vegetarian diets, the base, like here in India, salad is not part of the menu.
They don't even know what it is.
Yeah, it's just not there. There's some salad elements and some snacks and things.
Yeah, salad, they're great vegetables.
Yeah, a few things, this and that, and it's not eaten at a main meal time. Because raw and cooked food together isn't digestible.
Hmm. You know? Oh, really?
Yeah, can't digest. You have to eat them completely separately, or at least separate them in your meal. It means you eat all your raw things, then eat all your cooked things, or vice versa.
Even or fruits and vegetables don't go.
No, you have
fruits and grains.
Yeah, there's an order you can do. The most scientific one diet I've seen that can accommodate anything in it is the Bengali diet, because they eat one thing right after another. They never mix anything. Like even the North Indian diets, is all the preparations are served at once, and you eat them all how you please. So they're all designed in such a way that you can do that, and it'll be fine for the health. But the Bengali is more set. You eat the bitter, then you eat the spinach, then you eat the dal and the other simple subjects, then you eat your rich subjects, then you eat chutneys, then you eat your. If you're going to mix everything, then you eat your fruits, then you eat your sweets.
Yeah.
You can't mix it.
Fruits in the morning.
Yeah, that's better, is fruit in the morning, because then it's like Prabhupada says, fruit in the morning is gold, silver in the afternoon, lead at night. Because fruit is heavy to digest. But because you're working on a paradigm that low fat is considered good, because the women want to look anorexic so that they can fit into their pants and stuff. So therefore, fruit is considered valuable because of that aspect. You know? So then it becomes important. So then you eat it any time. They don't have it. But the thing is, it only really can be absorbed in the morning. And it should be taken with milk products, which that the Western paradigm won't know. You don't mix those two.
Yeah.
That's the thing. So many of the things that they do are completely against actually what works.
That's all based on economic
problems. So it's just what somebody's come across. It's by accident. Somebody sits there and researches, but that just means trial and error, trial and error, trial and error. So you never know. They go off in one direction. They'll take that direction as far as they can. And when they see it's a complete dead end, then they'll take another one. But it's not that they're working on a foundation to prove, you know, the Vedic statements or anything like this. So, it's just like, how much is it known knowledge that, you know, excessive loss of semen is bad for the health?
They promote it.
Yeah, they promote it.
You say you go insane if you don't.
Yeah, I mean, they have all these theories, but we know it's different. So that's the whole point, is that's the difficulty. So it's not just in one, it's in all the areas. They're nuts in all the areas. They get a few points right. If they didn't get something right, they wouldn't be alive. You know? But that's the difficulty, is they're not seeing. You know, they'll say without meat you'll die, some people. You know?
And to add to that point, you're saying that they were stressing that protein. Now they've actually found that because of that
over amount of protein,
that your body, to deal with the proteins, your body uses calcium, and then it uses calcium to bond to the proteins, and then it flushes you out of your system.
So you get a build up of calcium.
You get build up of calcium,
and then you get brittle bones and all different kinds of bone problems, because it takes it, when you, you don't have it, where you got to get it from, it takes it from your bones.
Uh-huh.
And
your teeth.
Yeah.
So then now they'll say, I think you need 20 grams. And that was, I think, in the 80s. So what they say now that you need, I don't know. You know, so it just keeps changing. That's the whole thing. You know, it's just like, how you say? You know, B vitamins. You know, that's a big thing, B vitamins, right? So then one of the things in the B vitamin complex that makes it that you can even absorb the stuff and use it is something called inositol. But many of the B vitamins, they don't put it in at all. All it is that if people see B vitamins, they buy it. And the guy that manufactured it, what does he care if you get healthy or not? It's a business. So there's a certain proportion of inositol that's necessary to absorb the B vitamins. Otherwise, it's there, you can't use it. You know, have you ever taken those, you know, 5,555 times? And then what color is your urine?
Yeah, right.
It's like fluorescent, multicolored. What is that? You know, what is that? That is all those vitamins.
Yeah, for every vitamin you need an enzyme. That's what the benefits from eating the green vegetables, because you get the enzyme to deal with the vitamins.
Yeah, you don't get the vitamins from there. Yeah.
No, well, yeah, you get all the enzymes that are able to you to actually use vitamins. For a vitamin, it's like a, you know, just kind of floats around. The enzymes would kind of
bonds with it,
and then you use it. Without an enzyme, vitamins, we use it.
Yeah. So that's the whole... Prabhupada wrote an article in 1955 that it's nothing to do with vitamins and minerals. What it is that the body is designed, if you put a particular foodstuff into it, it will create it. It's just like we eat whatever we want, and it'll create glucose. That's what we burn.
Right.
You put in lactose, well, it'll make it into glucose. Mm-hmm. You put in fructose, it'll make it into glucose. You put in starch, it'll make it into glucose. So it's not that you have to eat glucose. You just have to eat your food that the body can convert. So he gives the example of the cow. You give it absolutely useless straw, dry straw, and it'll turn it into milk, which is full of all vitamins and minerals. Mm-hmm. Because their stomach digests it to produce that. So the human stomach, if you eat, you know, grains and vegetables and milk products and sugars and all these things that are just what the human being eats, your body will automatically create what you need.
Mm-hmm.
That's the principle. So that's the whole point is, and then that science of what you need, that's given by God. So He gives what foodstuffs we should eat. So that's the point that we're trying to get at, is that what is the standard by which you judge it? Is it God's standard? Or is it our own standard? Because our own standard always changes. That's the difficulty. So that means you're left with a religion that's constantly changing on it. You know, so that can be an anxiety, because at some point you want to nail it down. You know? Sometimes, like you see 60-year-olds aren't that much into change. You know, it's just kind of like, you know, whatever they've done, go along with that and finish their life with that. They're not into the, you know, the youth don't mind it. You know, the middle-aged don't mind, but at some point it gets a little old. So now if you have something that you've always been dealing with, then by the time you're a young man, you're expert in your religion. You know, you can get a future from it. You can get a vision. You can get a methodology. You can get all that from that. So then you can move forward so easily. But the other one, he's constantly trying to find himself. Right? That's it. Life begins at 40, right? Like that. That's what, you know, it shouldn't begin then. It should have, you know, begun a little bit before that, you know?
That's so ridiculous.
Yeah. Because at 40, they finally figured out who they are. You know, that's the thing.
They figured out who they think they are.
Yeah, who they think they are, yeah.
And then when they're 50, they say, laughing into 50.
Yeah, you also hear that. Well, then, because at 50, then it's mature. Because at 40, they weren't quite sure. At 40, they become aware that what they've done before, there's something wrong with it. Right? That's the hard wiring of the... It's created... That wiring is made in the human being to create vanaprasthas. That's what it's for. It's that when you hit in the 40s, you start to have a doubt about the paradigm that you had before in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to analyze it and re-identify yourself. So generally they figure that out by 50. So then they get a new direction.
So if you have to try
new kids.
Yeah, new wife, new kids, new business, you know, new this, open your own consultancy, you know, go, move to a new place, you know, the Bahamas, you know, all these things.
So if you have the training, then when you when you hit that age, then you can see that the new direction instead of like then trying to do what you're trying, what you've been doing, more dull.
Yeah, you don't. You, in other words, they think they've changed directions. They haven't. They've kept the same paradigm. They've just changed the detail. But while for the Vedic is they keep the same detail basically. It's just that they change the effect of the material energy. Because what's supposed to happen is I have done everything perfect. I followed my duties, and I'm expecting to be happy from this. Then I've seen, I perform my duties, and because they have faith, you know it's God's duties, you have to do. So then, if I'm not happy, why? It's not because of the duties, it's because of the material energy. Therefore, my house, my position, my family, my children, my wealth, my everything that I have, that can't make me happy. Because I've tried it, I've tasted it, I've had my nice interactions with my family, and my wealth, and my position, and all that. I'm not happy. I tried it. And I know that doing that will get you the best result according to whatever I deserve. Because I can see others who have followed it, they've enjoyed immensely. Like that. And I'm following it, and whatever I deserve by my karma, I will enjoy that much. But having enjoyed it, then you see what's there. There's nothing there. It's empty. You know, it's just a promise of something, but it doesn't actually have anything. Therefore, then they change that paradigm and go in a completely different direction, meaning now controlling the senses and turning away from this economic development and sense gratification. And then they focus on going back to Godhead. That's what that hardwiring is meant to do. So if you don't know what it is, then it's going to bewilder you. That's why you see generally in the 40s, you know, 40s, late 40s, mid late 40s, the devotees, and they start to think, yeah, you know, all this and that, and they start to move in the direction to give it up. But then when they hit 50, if they haven't had that determination enough, then they go off, start a new life, you know, new material life, like that. Very, very common. Is they don't know that this is what's going on. And there's a karma, as it happens, the karma is, oh, it's normal. Midlife crisis. Yeah. You know? Hmm. Like that. And then, you know, all these studies are done, this, that. But you don't have to study. It's already there in the Veda. Because this is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to pull yourself back. And keep going in that direction. So that. And one may continue in the Grihastha ashram as a vanaprastha, you know, with the wife and all that, but reducing all the economic development just down to just what you need and emphasizing devotional service. Or if the family's set up and the son's running and all that, and they'll leave the wife there and then go off and become much more severe. Like that. But in any case, one's pulling back. So either basically still within the sphere of the Grihastha or not so much within the sphere. But the principle is the same. So that kind of a thing then comes up, is that all these duties are there and they're made for this purpose. To fulfill all of your needs, and at the same time as ultimately then we see is that the next ashram to be described is the vanaprastha. You know, it's supposed to bring one to that platform. One understands that material life doesn't offer anything. Family life does not offer anything. Money doesn't offer anything. Position doesn't offer anything. You can't satisfy. So therefore, I turn my attention to the devotional process. I may still have my family and money and this and that, but that's not where I'm putting my focus. That's not my value system anymore. That's just practical, you know, dealings, social dealings. But my real focus is then on how to get devotional service, how to become, you know, situated and become realized in Krishna consciousness. So that's there. So that's why it's recommended. If someone wants to get married, and then you know, deal properly. The husband has these duties, wife these duties, then they'll get the maximum taste that is available out of it. Right? But it doesn't mean that you're going to actually get anything. You know what I'm saying? Because the thing to gain from the Grihastha Ashram, or any dealing with the material energy, but that's because that's the most prominent in the Grihastha Ashram, so therefore that's emphasized the most, is to get rid of the idea that something is there. Right? If I tell you nothing's there in the mind, it creates a whole thing. But if you actually deal with it, then you see it's not. Like you decide in your mind, eating this food is so wonderful, is so great, you can go on thinking about it for years. You know, and if you get something here, something there, then you'll maintain it. But if it's like, okay, you say you're going to get this from it, okay, here it is, go for it. And then you eat eat the most favorite item a few times in a row, and it loses something. So that's the whole idea, is that if all these things, they run nicely, and the interactions are nice, then one naturally gives up one's attraction for it, because one deals with it and says, hey, this doesn't offer anything. My mind says, I'm going to get this out of that, and that happens, and it doesn't. Right? So then slowly, slowly, after, 20, 30 years of this, then one sees, hey, I see a pattern here. there's something going wrong. Everybody says you're going to be happy, and I look around, nobody else is happy, and I've tried it, I'm not happy, and then, this is the real conspiracy. Yes, there is a conspiracy going on here. The conspiracy that there's something to gain from material endeavor. So that's the...
At that point, they either become completely bitter and twisted and cynical, or they actually start searching for self-realization.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not a devotee, I'm sure.
If you're not a devotee, yeah. So you see that there's all kinds of stuff. So that's why the devotee, knowing that these are coming, he does it. Because the point is you have to be a fool to go into marriage thinking that it's something fabulous. You really have to be an idiot. Because you talk to any of the married men, and it's like a necessary evil.
Yeah.
You know, what is that saying? You can't live with them, can't live without them. So it's understood. So why is it you can't live without them? Why is it you can't live with them? Right? Why is it a necessary evil? Right? So you must know what is the necessity, what is the evil. How to live with them, how to live. So all those things. Those that can live without them can live with them. You take the thing and reverse it. Those who are controlled senses, they can live with women. Those who have uncontrolled senses can't live with women. Right? Because the senses are the women's field. So if you depend upon them for your senses, they control you, then you can't live with them. Because they don't have respect for you. And yeah, like that. But if your senses are controlled, then you're out of their loop, though living with them. That they can't figure out. So they're always they're always respectful about that, because it's mysterious to them. And anything that's mysterious to them, they respect. Because it's an experience. Everybody else, they walk down the street and they're all, gawking at them. This guy doesn't. And okay, I can understand he doesn't gawk at me, and he's nasty. He hates women, or whatever it is, he's on his trip. But he doesn't gawk at me, but he deals nicely with me. And he's considerate, and he's dutiful. All the symptoms of someone who's attached, but you can't find any attachment. That blows your mind. That person they respect. That person they follow. That person's guru. So that's the other side of the, women are supposed to be submissive to the husband, this, right, that, and all. Yeah, that's all, but what husband? They're submissive to a pati. And a pati means someone who leads. Leads means they lead by controlled senses. No one can lead if they don't have controlled senses. So that's the whole thing. You'll find the more the husband's senses are controlled, and he's dutiful and kind, then the more the respect that the women have for those men. That's why you see is the women will respect, you know, senior Vaishnavas so much, because their senses are controlled and they'll deal very nicely. So they respect that. So the principle, the Vedic principle, is every man's supposed to be like that. That's why he goes to the Gurukul, to learn how to control his senses, how to be dutiful, right? Therefore, away from the women. Right? How to be dutiful, therefore the menial service. Right? He has to have knowledge, therefore the study of the scriptures. Right? And on top of that, okay, he's got to maintain the family, so he's an occupation, therefore the particular specialization. But that's one out of four. So that's why the scriptures say one has to be a fool, that one only studies for economic development. If one's purpose to study is to get a degree so you can get a job, that consideration is for fools. That's for idiots. Because that's not human life. You have to have the other three. Your senses are controlled. You don't have a service attitude. You don't know the scriptures and how to, therefore, how to view the world, how to interact with the other body. You don't know the etiquette. You're not a human being. You may have a job, you may have, you know, money in your pocket, but you're not human. Yeah. That's the Vedic principle. Yeah. So the Vedic principle is that human life starts with following in the Vedic culture. That's where it begins. Fortunately, devotional service is transcendental to this. That's why in this age one does not perfect one's life by varnashram. Because you can't get all the elements in place. Right? Because to follow varnashram you have to be pious. Right? Impious people don't follow it. You have to be pious. So then the difficulty comes. So one may say, well, what about the demons? They follow it. Because they're pious. Doesn't mean that they're not demoniac by mentality. Their consciousness is demoniac, but they may be pious by their endeavor. Right, that's the difference between a yavana and a malecha. Malecha is just low class. But a yavana can be really refined. But a yavana is against the Vedic principles, while a malecha just doesn't know about it. You know? Yavana means they're against Vedic principles. Malecha means just they don't follow. They're ignorant. That's the... Sometimes also put it the cow killers, because that's against the Vedic principles. So it's a generic term, but it sometimes will get can be applied to a particular group, but it doesn't have to be. It's a generic. Does that make some sense? So that's all these different things. Then study the Veda, then he has sadhana. Then in the yearly course, the main, you know, like the main course of study is from this, the second month of Chaturmas. Means it's the Purnima, I think, after Radhastami. It's the middle of the Chaturmas here, Vishrut Mahotsav. So from there to Basant Panchami, what's today. That's the main Vedic study. That's where they focus the most on the heaviest part of the study. And then from now until Vishrut Mahotsav, then they'll do 2 weeks heavy study, 2 weeks light study, 2 weeks heavy study, 2 weeks light study. Because the summertime doesn't lend itself, the spring, the summer, the rain, doesn't lend itself to really focused study, because the nature of it, it's just...
Turbulent.
Yeah, turbulent, and the mood, the spring, the this, the, you know, all these things, it's just... You can't focus as long, but like that fall and winter.
It's either distracting, or in a good sense, or distracting the negative.
Mm-hmm.
In the spring, it's attractive, it's nice. And then in the summer, it's raining, it's dry.
Yeah, or it's hot, or, you know, something, it's hard to focus. But the fall, the winter, you can focus really well. So then they just sense it's the best time, and the most important things are studied then. So the primary subject is exclusively studied during that period, in the primary study. In the secondary, then you go back and forth between primary, secondary, like that. You know, so 2 weeks you study primary, 2 weeks you study secondary, like that. Some will do it just, they'll only study primary during the primary season, and only study secondary according to, during the secondary season. That's also a way of doing it. Like that. So I'm not sure if that's a specific of the Veda or like that. But Manu mentions the 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, like that. And then, okay, then personal behavior. So then we see further, Karen bathing, Karen walking, you know, he doesn't step on anybody like that. He doesn't, you know, like when it's raining, he doesn't run because he might slide, hurt himself. You know, little things like that. Let him not show particular attention to the wife of another man, you know, because it said that there's nothing more detrimental than that. Because that can create more problem than anything. You know, you don't want the other man bent out of shape because, you know. So whatever is like, you know, the natural relationship, the family relationship, social relationship, that much attention is paid. More than that, you don't pay. Like that. Or you have no connection, no attention is paid. With the family, friends, it's only that much. It doesn't go beyond. Right. Like that. Otherwise, it'll just create doubt. People get an anxiety, all these different things, you know, like that. We were just reading today, Draupadi, because Satyabhama asked Draupadi, how do you keep five husbands in line? You know, we're just trying to keep one in line. How do you keep five? And one of the points she makes is that she doesn't, is not seen, having an interaction, a pleasurable interaction with anybody else, you know, like that, and especially if the husband's there, you know, because this is all the relationship. It's just like even with the children, she won't interact with the children to the complete distraction of her husband. But she's so much in the kids and this and that, and he's not part of the consideration. Right. She wouldn't do that because he's also. Means the point is they are also his children, and she is his wife. So if the husband's not there, then she can do that and interact and so much and do like that in that way. But if he's there, it's the family interacting. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like that. Otherwise the husband feels left out. Mm-hmm. So then if he feels left out, then he's going to look elsewhere. Then he may, if he's trained and not, he may turn to other men and spend more time, but then that means then that mood of detachment is going to build. And so then vanaprastha sannyas may come a little earlier. You know, which is okay, as long as it does. If he's trained well enough, then it may. If he's not trained well enough, then it may end up in a different marriage. You know, because he'll lose interest here and go somewhere else. So that's the whole thing, is that all these little details they should know. Let him never despise a kshatriya, a snake, and a learned brahmana. Right? Because even if they seem to be not very powerful, still
dangerous.
Like that. You know. Because they have that power. If they don't have it today, they'll have it tomorrow.
But they're supposed to kill a snake? I see they see a snake, they kill
it. If it's not poisonous, it shouldn't bother them. Unfortunately, around here is that there's actually only two poisonous snakes here. There's varieties of cobra and there are varieties of the viper, chandrapura.
Aren't there crates here?
Not right here. There's only the chandrapura and the cobras. There's three kinds of cobras and I think two kinds of chandrapuras.
How do you recognize the viper?
A crate once in there, it was in your house.
No, but there's snakes that look exactly like the others, but there's a green snake and there's some other things that there is a poisonous snake that looks just like that, but there's a slight difference. Because we've had two devotees, one that was a snake freak, that was their hobby, and they would go around and point them out, and they would say, how you tell the difference between this and the actual poisonous one, it has like that, and he would point out, he'd say, because he'd go there, pick them up, play with them. These big 8-foot snakes catch them. You know, because there's one, they will say it's a poisonous snake, but it's a wolf snake, so it's something else. Mm. And there's a green snake that there is a green snake that's poisonous, but it doesn't live in this district.
Yeah, and they kill off those. I only found out recently that they weren't poisonous.
Yeah, yeah. There's a green snake. Thin green snake.
The ones in the trees?
Yeah, they trees, houses, they like to climb up in things. Yeah. You know, they say they come out and bite your eye.
The poisonous one's the green mamba.
Yeah, but it's not here. It's not in this district. In this district, you only have cobras and that. So it's, so the point is, but you know, whatever it is, the point is that, you know, you upset them, then they can get you afterwards. A kshatriya may be small or weak, but in the future when he becomes strong, you know, then you know.
They don't forget.
Yeah,
so they carry a grudge.
Yeah, well, but the Brahmins don't. But the Brahmins has been unjust, so it's against the scriptures.
Yeah.
So therefore, that justice has to be established. The other one is justice has to be established, but there's that passion of themselves; they don't forget. And snakes definitely are not overly known for forgiveness.
It's a good example, isn't it? The interaction between Draupada and Dronacharya.
Yeah.
They both violated that.
Yeah, that's right. And they both got each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Chanakya. Mm. Chanakya was insulted by King Nanda. So Chanakya then announced that I will see you, you know, you and your dynasty removed from the throne. Like that, so then Nanda became very upset, told him to catch him. But because he knew the science, you know, the kingly science, the Arthashastra so well, then he knows the palace, so he knows how to escape. You know, because he'll know all the inner secret chambers and everything like that, because they all build it according to certain rules.
Mm.
So the kings will know it, the other people won't. Because he knew the science, and he could escape. And then it took him 8 years, but he brought down Nanda. And established Chandragupta like that. Or others, you see, is that I don't know the story of it, but let's see which ones, you know, because of curse. Whose curse? I think Bhikkhu's curse. The Agni has to eat all kinds of things. Previously, he only ate the offerings, but then he got cursed, so he had to eat everything. So as the fire digestion in the stomach of animals, that eats everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so these kind of things. Then it points out that people have gotten into serious trouble by offending these three, like that. So you know, you'll see this is also Niti Shastra. You know, so it's the Niti is based on this Artha Shastra, and Niti are based on the Dharma Shastra because it has the seeds of everything. You know? Let him not despise himself on account of failure. Means he may fail, but he can't despise himself, because to despise yourself means you consider you're the doer. You understand? That's the whole point. That means you have the pride that I am the controller, I am the doer, but I couldn't control this one. So, and I wasn't able to do it properly, therefore I fail. No. It's that the point is this. We simply can desire and try, and according to the Lord's will, we may be successful or not. So our duty is to continue doing what's right. The result's up to the Lord. So if it doesn't work, you just move forward and keep going forward. That's why Krishna... Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's the...
Or you could look at it, I was foolish enough to play with these emotions. And what
can I yeah, my, yeah, that's it. It's just...
The mode of fashion, and this is what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it means the Shastra says it. I did it, and so that's just the way it is. It's not me, because otherwise it's self-centered. It's the ego is there. So that's the whole point. Is that's the difference between the actual humility, the Vaishnavas, and the modern. Modern humility is basically has that element of lack of self-confidence, right? And then when you have some ego, you have confidence. You know, you have an attitude. But the Vedic is that you're humble, but you don't see yourself as... You see yourself as, I'm foolish for having taken up the material energy, but there's no ignorance in it, so they don't stop their endeavor. Because lack of self-confidence means you don't endeavor. Because you don't have a goal. Right? If I don't have a thing... It's like, I won't lead the kirtan. Why I won't lead the kirtan? Because... I won't lead the kirtan in such a way that afterwards everyone's going to be, coming up and patting me on the back and saying great and this and that. You know, maybe they'll say, they won't think it was great. So it's actually out of ego that one doesn't. But it's projected as you know, humility or a lack of confidence like this. You know, if it's sincere humility, there's no quality of someone else would be so much better. The devotees would be more enlightened than this, you know, this devotee who is so qualified. That's okay, that's humility. But just, I don't do it because I'm afraid that I won't get a fabulous result. You know, after the class, there won't be a standing ovation and flowers drop from the sky, you know, like that. So that's the element that's there. So it's so much of the time, because of ignorance, things get spun around to the opposite of what they actually are. Like that.
It's like you're saying, ignorance can be seen as goodness as opposed to...
Yeah, because the guy's just so mellow and doesn't get involved. He's just ignorant, you know. You know, it's like you go to Australia. People think the koalas are cute. But they're the most ignorant, practically ignorant creature there is. They sleep 22 hours a day. They get up for 2 hours, eat eucalyptus leaves, get so intoxicated that they fall out of the trees.
And they're vicious as well.
Yeah, they got huge nails. They got big nails like this.
But are they vicious?
Oh, yeah.
They can, if you get them upset.
Territorial or mating season.
Yeah, you get them upset or like that, they can scratch you like anything. You know, they have, but you know, somehow they always think it's so cute and all this.
Yeah. They look so cuddly.
Yeah. It's so funny.
But they actually stink. We went to the Sydney. We went to the zoo there and saw the koalas. God damn.
They stink. Huh?
They stink like it.
Yeah, that's the whole point. So it's like. Yeah. Okay. Appropriate speech, so how he speaks should be proper. Let him not insult others, right? It means just because someone has a fault, or you know, physical or intellectual or social or anything like that, they should not be insulted. It's not proper, because then you're proud of your position, so you think you are that, when it's only the duty that we have. You know, that's the principle. We're not the thing. This is the conditioned nature we have, so this is the natural duties I would do. How to engage. I have to engage in the Lord's service. What service to do, I see according to my conditioned nature. So it's just what I happen to be. So it's not that it's special. It's just my medium to serve the Lord. Someone else has a different one. You know, any medium is viable. You know, if you follow the Lord's directions, then any medium is valuable. Care while impure, so as impure, don't touch things, you know, this and that. He has to be careful. He has to know when he's impure. Like that. He has to know when he's impure. Eagerly following auspicious customs and the rule of good conduct. So he should eagerly follow them. Now you're only going to eagerly follow them if you're convinced. When you have faith in them, you eagerly follow. So that's why he should study. He should ask why. He should inquire. He should practice. And then from that, then he'll become convinced. So he'll naturally be eager. So here by saying he's eager means not that he's just one, is if he's new, he does it because he's heard from authority. It's good. But he should study and convince himself that he is doing because he's convinced that it's good, not just because people told him it's good. It starts from that.
That's how you end up with devotees also that get burned out.
Yeah.
Actually convinced.
Yeah. They committed themselves, but they didn't actually become convinced. So they become therefore deviated. You know, you have to look at the whole thing. What is your purpose? Where your goal? So be eager means you have a goal. You can only be eager if you have a goal. You can only have a goal if you understand actually what are the considerations involved. You know, one's own identity, the surroundings, the Lord, you know, the other's personalities involved. When you understand that field, the field of activity, and within that field you can see a goal. When that goal becomes fixed in the mind, then you can be eager to pursue it. That's the whole thing. So just by saying, you know, eagerly following, then that already means that it's come to that point of application by realization. You know, that's already inferred by that. Then the primary duty means that primary duties must be done. Primary duties means, you know, for us means our God consciousness, then within that, okay, within the, you know, the, within the Varna ashram, then what are the primary duties, the principles on which the ashram or Varna works? Those always have to be in place. Details of its application, that may change or not according to time, place, and circumstance. But principle means it always applies. You know? That's the thing. Like you can say, you know, a car is, you know, basically a vehicle, let's say, with that runs on wheels. You know? Let's just take that. We don't say four, because you possibly could run on three.
Right.
You know? Like that. You know, we got a flat tire, run on three or something. Or, you know, so you have to, the principle is that which always applies. The detail, then, is the application. Right? So then here is that the primary must be in place. That means we have to know what it is. We have to be studied where we know what is the principle details, I mean the principles of our situation, of devotional service, you know, of us, the material energy, of our position within the social and spiritual, you know, circles, how all that functions. Then those in place, then you choose your secondary. And then of those details, some are primary, some are secondary. So the primary should always be done, and the secondary may or may not be done according to time, place, and circumstance. If somebody always follows secondary and never follows the primary, then they'll never be successful. They'll always have a problem.
Okay. Far from his dwelling, let him remove impurities, so he shouldn't live with all kinds of impure things right next to the house. You know, the garbage, the this, the that. Everything should go away from the house. It's just like that. It's just like impurity should go far from the heart. It shouldn't be in your dwelling, right? It means, in other words, your house, you yourself, your lifestyle, your dependence, your everything you do should be pure. Therefore, impurities are thrown far away. Right? And then the gross manifestation means, you know, the dirt from the house. You know, those should be far away. You know, they shouldn't be right next to the house.
So that means that in the modern house, you know, we have the bathroom. It's not really.
That is, well, it's just what goes from the bathrooms that goes somewhere else. You know, so that way.
Yes. We have flush toilet.
Yeah. So then it goes somewhere. But then, but if it's not, you know, you have more of an outhouse, then that shouldn't be too close to the house. It should be at a distance. You know, where garbage is thrown, it shouldn't be right next to the house, it should be at some distance. It should be distant enough that you're not going to get the smells, you're not going to get all the bugs and rats and this and that and inconvenience and eyesore and all these different things, because that's only going to lower the refinement of human life. Mm-hmm. And when that refinement goes down, then you have also the focus on the fine aspects of spiritual life may also become affected. Right? The more one's advanced, the less it'll be affected. But in the beginning stage, it might be affected. Like that.
Respecting the deities, Brahmas, the king, and his gurus. You know, so that he should always be respectful every day towards the deities, the Brahmas. The king means whoever is the administrator and the gurus. Reverence towards venerable guests. He must always be, you know, how you say, have that reverence for any respectable person, you know, and especially then for, you know, senior guests, you know, Kshatriyas and others who may come to the house, like that. And following the conduct of virtuous men. So this is that. This is all the section on what is it? Good behavior, right? Rules of good conduct. Yeah. So then, that's the basic conclusion of that, is following in the footsteps of the virtuous men. Like that. So what the acharyas have given us, what the other great devotees have done, you know, these are our example. You know, we see, well, as an administrator, one sees, well, what does Yudhishthira does, what does Prithu do, what does Dhruva do? All these, we take them, you know. Brahmins, then what do these great Brahmins do? You know, Sudama Vipra and others, what the four Kumaras, Narad Muni. You know, what have they done? How to follow in their footsteps, like that. So we always have somebody who's virtuous. They should be the one we're following, not just somebody who's on a billboard.
Okay, so that brings us up to this self-reliance.
Okay, so then we'll, I guess we'll end there. Any other comments or anything else today? No? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai.
Sarvabhita Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai.
Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai.